So we're back post-interview. How do you feel?
I feel great. How do you feel?
Yeah, I'm feeling relaxed and awesome. Yeah.
Oh, I have a question for you, by the way. How do you pr I know it's a Swedish last name. How do you, is it Poulsen?
Pearlson.
Pilsson. Sorry. Continue.
Pearlson. So if I Englishify it, it'll be Paulson. Like Paul McCartney, Paulson. Paulson.
Paulsen.
Which is funny because I just released a pack for the rhythm game called Poulsen, which is very similar sounding. So Poulsen is a Paulsen pack. It's like
Wow,
great.
that
Like
works
my tongue cannot handle,
out well.
speaking these words.
Cool.
Yeah, Poulsen is a rhythm and dance game. Where like Dance Dance Revolutions, and you can the game itself is free with a few songs, and you fork up a few dollars, you can play my songs, much like Rock Band or something like that.
Yeah, I noticed that. Gosh, I can't remember the name. I have to look it up now. But somebody was dancing to your music on YouTube,
Oh yeah,
and I thought he was actually doing a really good job of it. A really good
Piercing the
dancer.
Sky.
Oh, right, that's right. Yeah, it was on your
Yeah,
site.
it's on my site, yeah, on the front page there.
How did that come about? That's really neat. He just sort of liked your music and
Let's
thought
see
that.
here. Let's see how. Oh, first, there was this girl who danced to my. Let me see. Jag kommer, which is a Swedish hit. I made a chiptune cover of that song. And I had contact with this dancer. She wanted to. I can't remember how I came across, how we started talking, but turns out she dances to stuff already, likes electronic music. And I can't remember if she contacted me or I contacted her, but anyway, she ended up doing this dance for this song, which is on my page as well. And after she was done, I thought, hey, this is actually fun. Maybe I should get some more people to dance for the tracks in my CD Adventure. So I asked around a little bit, and the guy dancing and piercing the sky responded, and oh, he was actually a computer game nerd geek himself and loved my V, and the music was awesome. And it's like, yeah, I want to do it. And
Cool.
it's really cool because that guy is, I mean, he's really good at what he does.
Yeah. Yeah,
He's
for sure.
been, some of the stuff he's, some of the moves he pulls is really awesome. He's got like hordes of fans.
Yeah.
He's probably more famous than I am.
Yeah.
And he's like the rhythms and dancing. It's like one of the videos, he doesn't even have a shirt on. It's like oiled in and whatnot. So it's like, what the hell's going on? So he gets fans that like both guys and girls.
Oh, right, yes.
But hint, hint.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, everything taken. Yeah. Oh, that's really neat though. I mean, what a neat opportunity to just sort of see your work being taken from another perspective, you know. I mean, I've never done any I try to do classical stuff. I'm sort of into classical music. I'm getting my master's right now in classical composition, and I still haven't really done anything more than say dabbling in ballet and dance related forms. So the experience I would think of having music sort of transferred into motion would be a really sort of I don't know, just a really interesting one. I can't really describe it, but it's just I would think that that would have some revelations about the music itself. I mean, if somebody was dancing to my music, I would think, oh, maybe I don't know if that particular part was so conducive to the dance. Maybe I should have composed that differently or something like that. So.
I think that if I was dancing myself, the steps that a professional dancer gave to me based off of my song, that would transcend myself into some other dimension. Like, what the hell? I didn't know my music was designed to make these moves, but now I see it. You know, because it's like any master of a craft can it's like a kid making a house and like painting, like, I want my house to look like this, and it's like they're painting very crudely. And then so a master architect looks at this and like, oh, I see what the kid was really trying to do, right? And then he makes it, and everybody goes, wow, how did you make that? Well, I just copied a kid.
Yeah.
Well, what? And then they look at it, the guy's other stuff. Maybe his other stuff that he created himself is not as inspired. What the hell is going on there?
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
Sure.
So it's important to have, for me, like to have both the brain and the heart connected in the creation process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was an interesting film on this topic by Orson Welles called F for Fake. I remember seeing this in high school. And it focused on, not forgeries exactly, but on imitation paintings and an imitation painter. And he was getting in all sorts of trouble because he was so good that the paintings were sort of indistinguishable, his paintings from the masterpieces that he was copying. But his trouble was he really didn't have the sort of the, I don't know, the impetus or the whatever to create new things.
Yes.
All he could do was copy.
That sounds... Yeah, there's numerous of accounts of this happening, even in reality. I came to think of savants, people who are like they can see a landscape, like a cityscape, for 5 minutes. They take a helicopter ride over a city, like drive around it, and then they go home, pick up a pencil, and just in minute like detail, photographic memory and ability to write and to draw this, they draw the entire cityscape on a big canvas.
Wow.
And anybody looking onto that says, oh, he got it wrong. Look, it's like the curves are all wrong. Like it's like a dome, like he screwed up.
Okay.
Yeah. And like, dude, he flew around the city, remember?
Yes, you know? That's right. Right. I mean, it's amazing, the memory of things like that. I've got an autistic brother who's, it's less so now, but when he was growing up, when we were growing up together, he would have this amazing memory for very sort of peculiar things, very peripheral things, you know, like the various names of somebody's pets, you know, and where they went to school and things, and all this stuff would be mentioned in conversation, and it wouldn't seem like he was paying attention. But in reality, he was sort of busy creating this really detailed model of the world in his head, I think, is sort of what was going on. And he could relay this later, even if he couldn't communicate it perfectly. You could tell that it was all there and in sort of astonishing detail sometimes. And if it seemed like it was different, it's probably just because he was perceiving it differently.
Yes, I subscribe to that. I think you're spot on. And I would like to add to that that my belief is that everybody is a savant underneath. And the only reason we believe we are not is because we believe we are not.
Interesting. So the fact sort of that we sort of doubt ourselves prevents us from reaching the potential.
Yes, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, I mean that's very interesting.
I
suppose I really don't know how I feel about it. There are people I felt that maybe wouldn't conform to that completely though, because
absolutely, because they don't believe it.
Well, interesting. So you think it's sort of a willpower thing?
It's more like a faith thing, really.
Interesting.
Willpower. I mean, if you're really set on discovering whatever lies beneath, you can will yourself to it. But if you don't really see the gain or benefit, like there has to be some sort of motivation for it. Because people could go insane. Like if they disengage their critical mind, what's left underneath? It's like some insane stuff, quote unquote insane. Be like, oh, well, he did this and he turned autistic. Like now he's clinically insane. We should admit him to an asylum or whatever. when in fact he may be the wisest of us all.
Interesting.
It's just a perspective on life, because really that's all everybody has. Everybody has their own perspective, and I just say do whatever works for you, and if it feels good, do it. Except drugs. Drugs are bad, MK.
I see. I mean, it's interesting. I can't see myself fully agreeing, because I although it's true that, I mean, you know, self-doubt can be a huge obstacle in learning. I find it, there's just something that strikes me as somewhat cognitively dissonant about it, because, I mean, you've got this idea that somebody, that anybody, you're basically sort of asserting that anybody could be a great learner, a great sage, and all that they really need is to believe in themselves. And I think that to a degree that's true, because it, you know, believing that you could do it, it does help you, enable you to do it. But what do you say about, you know, a special education student which has difficulty picking up things, even though they believe maybe that they can do it, they still struggle with just the practical intellects.
Okay. I'm not sure about those. I don't want to make a judgment on that, because I just don't know.
Yeah.
But if it's a normal, healthy person, I think there's potential for greatness for anyone, really. What comes up more is, let me see here, there was something coming up here. Right, so even if you don't believe it, doesn't mean it's not true. It's like, oh, you're not paranoid? Well, even if you're not paranoid, doesn't mean they're not out to get you. it's like, wait a minute. So it doesn't really matter if you believe it or not. And that's my perspective, because that's my experience, because I didn't really believe, like, oh, I could be this musician that a lot of people listen to and think I'm really great and blah, blah, blah. That wasn't really in my reality. And I just created out of my own self-enjoyment, really. And that's what made it great.
Yeah, I can see that. There's something very childlike about your description of going out into the street and talking with strangers, or allowing distractions to... I think the main point was allowing distractions to come in, waft in, and leave. I have a lot of... just very sort of intuitive respect for that. I think it's probably a very good environment for creativity. I was doing an article on the Flash site newgrounds.com about, I guess, oh gosh, it was about a month ago now, but where I sort of talked about how when I first went to Newgrounds, the first time I visited the site, which is about 5 years ago or so, I thought, my God, what a mess. You know, there are so many... Well, basically, so many distractions. It's just a distraction-oriented site. You go on, and oh, here's a stupid flash. Oh, here's some interesting art. Oh, here's a, you know, and it's all sort of coming at you at once. And I was very, at first, I was very sort of turned off by this. I felt overwhelmed, and just it was an unpleasant experience. And then over time, those very same things that were at first unpleasant and overwhelming became exponentially conducive to creative impulses. You know, I would go on and I would see something, and then I would, you know, that would inspire me to check out something else, and I would think, oh, God, you know, I hadn't thought of it that way, or that's really funny, or that's a really neat idea. And there's just, it seems endless, the amount of creativity that goes on.
I'm gonna do something really nasty to you and everybody else who's listening to this right now. I'm gonna say tvtropes.com.
All right.
Now you're all screwed.
Oh no.
Don't go there. Don't go there.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. No, do it. No. Forbidden fruit. Forbidden area. You might learn something about this phenomenon. And yourself. Doo doo. Dramatic hamster moment.
It's like dun, dun, saying... It's like saying to somebody in a game, you know, if you just drop all your items and I think it's Alt F4, I think it was. Try Alt F4. It might be that. You know, then you know, enlightenment will come to you. And
oh, I have a basically. I have this game I want to recommend. You must win the game.
Oh, I think I might have played that. Was that on Kongregate?
I don't know. I got it from its own page.
Oh, oh.
But you must win the game. Play that game till the end. If you get that game, you'll have a blast.
No, I know what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of This Is the Only Level. I thought that was really clever. That's and that wasn't Kongregate. That was I think that must have been Armor Games. That it's a game where you've got a little elephant, and you have to get through this level. And the first time you do it, you think, "Oh, this is so, this is so dreadfully easy," and then it just gets. You do the same level over and over with different controls and things, and it becomes maddening. You know, at one point, I don't want to give too much away, but at one point, you're involved to do something else with your computer, it's not a new tab, but a sort of a new tab situation. And then you open the game in a new tab, and you know, suddenly you can go on to the next level or the next manifestation of that level.
Ah yes. Now we're touching on a like manifesting a new reality. That's an interesting discussion. Let's not go there. Like, we'll be here forever.
Sure.
But the game what many game players don't realize is that there is some kind of deeper truth about games. And games like this, like the art games, This Is the Only Level, You Must Win the Game, and the actual experience for the user to go on tvtropes.com and sort of getting lost until it's like, what the hell am I doing?
Right.
And like, there can be like this moment of impact where everything just clicks and makes sense. Like, oh my god, I've been playing all these games when I should have been. It's like
blank,
it's like pressing the Darth Vader no button. No.
Yeah. That's right. I found that the other day. There is something about games. There's something. It's an art form that forces you. It's forcibly immersive. You know, the moment you turn on a game. There's actually a phenomenon, a name for this phenomenon, where I don't remember what it is, but where we see something on a screen, a TV or game, or even maybe just flat artwork, and what we do in our brains is we project ourselves into the environment we're looking at. So we see Seinfeld, and we see ourselves with Jerry and the others.
Yeah.
And I think with games, that can be a very powerful. Sometimes maybe. I can see why it could be a dangerously powerful thing. You know, you could become lost in an escapist.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think that most people go through life in an escapist, lost, zombie way, which is what zombie games are so popular. But and if somebody were to create a game that was designed to snap zombies out of their zombie mode, we would have something really interesting on our hands, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we would.
Guess what I'm going to try to do.
Very cool. Well, tell me about your game. What are you
I can't. I can't.
Oh, okay. Well, don't then.
I can't speak about it publicly because there is just too many secrets. Too many secrets. And if you want the truth, you want the truth?
Oh.
You want the truth? You can't handle the truth.
And don't call me Shirley. Yeah.
I would surely don't do that.
Well, surely not. Well, I mean, okay. Well, I guess a game that comes to mind when we talk about something like this would be Journey, which I haven't played, but when I see the YouTube reviews and the making of and stuff about the game Journey from that game company, I sort of think, you know, there's something so incredibly otherworldly about this that how could you not? It is a how could you not moment. How could you play this and not feel snapped out of your zombie life? You
they
know?
Are definitely in the same area, except I aim to make it explicit.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, I see. Interesting. And all that infers, I guess. I don't want to talk about it if you.
Well, it's explicit and not. It's like if you go to a like in ancient times, if you're medieval times, you go to a town. There's a kingdom. The king is wise. Blah blah blah. There's the force of the knights. Blah blah blah. And then there's this town fool, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at many old movies and stuff, there's always like this the fool who's always saying like the stupidest things, and in the end it turns out he was the only one who knew the truth.
Mm.
And if dumb people didn't laugh at him, it wouldn't be the truth.
Yeah, there's a name for that too, the fool's truth or something, or a Shakespearean fool. I guess that's what I'm thinking of. I mean, that's a really neat device.
It's like taking the whole discussion to another level, which yeah. would be like going from Simpsons to Shakespeare and still calling it entertainment.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's like Shakespeare isn't entertaining. It's bullshit. It's like I watched one of those plays. It was boring as fuck, and my teacher raved on and on, and I hated him for it. He forced me through it. I hated it. Where's my World of Warcraft?
Yeah, of course, right. Because World of Warcraft is so different. I think it's actually that's actually a really good point. It's a shame that we hedge these things in our head as if, you know, entertainment was valid here and not valid here, or capable of saying something profound if it's mm-hmm. Shakespeare, but not if it's of a popular ilk, you know.
Yeah, but I think that's going to change.
Yeah, I hope so.
I mean,
yeah.
We are, like, games, it was several years ago that games surpassed movies in, like, gross revenue and money going around. So it's already the dominant medium to get any message across.
Mm.
Now, movies and stuff, plays have been around for a long time, but this interactivity makes for some pretty wild things to be possible.
Yeah, yeah. And movies, to me, seem very 20th century. You know, you go and you sit in this room and you watch something. And I mean, that to me, it's like it is a step up from the play, because it has, you know, all this electronic elements, and you've got razzle dazzle editing sometimes, and you know, mm-hmm. you've got all these things that could only happen post, you know, or post or mid 20th century. But
yeah.
But a game is just such another logical step for movies, you know, forward. You know, okay, now you've been watching these things happening all this time. Now try interacting with it. You know, how does that change things, and what can you say with that?
Mm-hmm.
And it strikes me as a 21st century idea.
Yeah, so I like it. Like, of course, games like Johann Sebastian Joust, which is interactive game using electronic your body as well. Like that's taking it to another step.
Yeah,
but it's still just fun and play. It's like the Simpson version, right?
Uh-huh.
But I, in a sense, I played it and it was fun, and it taught me something about myself that I didn't know, which is awesome. And it's awesome for what it does. I guess when I'm making my games, I haven't done any game yet. I just know I want to make games, right? So, yeah. I'm a game designer. What have you done? Nothing. It's like, well, good for you, man. Well, I had planned to. Yeah, all right. Come
Here's
back
my plan.
Done something.
Make a kick-ass game. Question mark. Revenue, and then.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like profit. Yeah. I've written like 40 pages of like design documents. So and
okay.
So there's at least some sort of force behind it to be creative.
Yeah.
Some time in, yeah, it's like, or it could just be my mind wanting to get it on paper.
Well, sure, it could be.
That's so, Johann Sebastian Joust, that it's a great game, it's fun, and doesn't have a lot of like morality, which I think is great, because once you put like, it's okay, I think it's okay to have a message, but if you force somebody, it's like, oh, you shouldn't do this, shouldn't do that. Then you're taking some of the exploration experience out of it.
Right.
I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think people should be led to a certain realization. So my games will have the option to where you can be good or bad or not play, really. Hmm. Or if you can pretty much end it at whatever stage you are and say, oh, that was nice. This is where I get off. Thank you. Hmm. And still have it be like TV Tropes, where there are like myriads of stuff left to explore. Yeah. So the question becomes like, do you have the time? Do you have the energy? Do you have the motivation?
Right.
Do you believe that there is something to get for yourself after going through all the treasures that are hidden within the system?
Right. Right. So sort of like the incredible immersiveness of like EVE Online or something like that, where players can just it can just never end if they don't want it to end. They can keep playing for forever.
Yeah,
and there's always incentives to do that, you know, which I think is sort of diabolical, you know.
Yes, yes, but that is it. Like, so that's one of the things. Like, do I want incentives in my games like that? You know, at one, V doesn't have incentives like that. It just has, here's the obstacle, complete it. Okay, cool. Here's a new obstacle.
Right.
Like, it's all just about overcoming obstacles.
Right. Sometimes very difficult obstacles.
Yeah. But you need to know what the obstacles are, at least.
That's
but
true.
I'm going to, yeah. So that's something I'm toying with it in my games, but I'm still like, well, there's a lot of people who really like the thing with power-ups and having like getting an edge, an advantage, and winning over other people and telling everybody else they're better. It's like all those like one-button games where you just have to get far. Like Cannibalt, for instance. You tell all your friends, I made it so far, and the other one's like, oh, that's nothing. I went this far. And it's like, oh my God, now I got to play more, and blah, blah, blah. The competition art aspect of it, and I don't know, it's like I want to use the traditional ways of getting people to play in a way where they don't think it's very manipulative, or I'm gonna make it blatantly manipulative, so that, okay, player, listen up. You're about to be manipulated.
Here's how
it goes.
Yeah.
Do you want to play? You know?
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, there's you know, I never really thought of it this way before, but there is something a little bit sadistic about games that are... I enjoy it, so don't get me wrong, but there is something a little bit sadistic about the idea of a game really outlining all of the things that could be done, and then saying, oh, hey, look at how far along you are. It's not very far, is it? You know, you could do all this. I remember playing, when I was a little kid, playing Yoshi's Story with on the SNES with all of my friends, and sort of, every time you would pass a level, I still think it's an incredible game, really, because every time you get to the end of the level, as in many games, it would show you all of the things that could be done. I mean, it said, good for you, you beat the level, but look at all of this other stuff that you hadn't done yet because you didn't know it was there.
Yeah, look, and now you get a glimpse of the overhead map, and you've done 1%. Congratulations. Like, what?
Exactly, and there is a sadomasochist thing going on there, because I think as much as we get angry at the game for, you know, for hiding all this stuff, we also enjoy being abused in this way, you know?
Yeah, people are very masochistic in that way. But so the only difference, really, for me... using like telling people like, oh, I'm gonna manipulate you now, is that when I lie, they knew about it, and I was honest. Like, my I was honest enough to tell them I was gonna lie to them, you know. Most people, most games rather, are completely opposite. Like V, for instance, maybe a bad example. Let's say any hack and slash game.
Okay.
Side scrolling, kill 'em all, Golden Axe. Yeah, Golden Axe. Or shoot 'em up. They just implicitly, there may be a backstory, but maybe not. So you just, here's your ship, and you must save the universe, or whatever. And then you start flying. It's like, okay, What are the controls? So I can move up, down, and I can shoot, and I can charge and lay a big bomb, I can do smart bombs. So
right.
Okay. And then comes enemies, and you're like, it's understood tacitly that you are to kill them. And now what? Okay. So that would be, it is manipulative, because you're telling the player basically this is what you're supposed to do, without giving them choice around it.
Yeah, interesting. That's a good point. I never thought of it that way.
I mean, people, this is, if taking another step back, it's like, in reality, what choices do you have over your own life? Did you have a choice whether you wanted to go to school or not? Do you have a choice what house to live under?
Right, of course. Like, yeah.
And it's like taking too many steps back like that and looking at everything as is his choice. God, suddenly we're having a huge discussion again, you know? Well, let's not go there.
Well, I'll briefly comment on it, because I think it's just fascinating. There's a terrific lecture in book also, but the lecture is sort of the book, a brief version of the book, by Sam Harris, on the sort of the illusion of free will and of choice, and how much it is an illusion, and how much sort of, if you just, with basic logic, you can sort of prove without a lot of effort that determinism is the only, is, or, you know, it seems to be the only valid explanation for things, you know. And his discussion about that, as it pertains to this, would be really interesting, because if a video game is separate from real life, you'd think that we would be able to, you know, have it play by, you know, whatever rules the developers wanted. But in the end, it does seem to be all deterministic at some level, because the computer, you know, isn't going to, it may have some level of randomness, but ultimately it's not going to make choices for you. You know, you go through and you, you follow the maze as if you were following the maze with a pencil. And there are only a set number of things you can do. I remember feeling in Terraria, like Terraria was about as free as it could be, you know, and it still wasn't free, you know, because there was a limit to what the game could offer you, you know.
So those are, of course, some limits, and as much as I would love to break those limits and make something really never-ending and large and whatnot, there's always going to be a limit. And it's just whether, like, finding those limits is, it comes down to reality, like, how much time and money can I spend on this? And okay, so even if I had procedurally generated content, it would still, I wouldn't say that, I would say that that's still limited, because it's limited to that procedure's content.
Interesting, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true.
Even if it's endless.
Yeah, it must be, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm exploring many of these concepts in one of the games I'm making. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I look forward to playing it. Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's still on the concept level. Then again, what isn't, you know?
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool.
It's going to be interesting, and
well, good for you for going for it, though. I mean, it takes a lot of courage at some level to do that.
Yeah, I can handle the truth, even if the truth is that even I am working out of determinism, and I'm just like another instance of this repetition we call life, and I'm a robot that's, well, you know, I didn't really have a choice about this, but inevitably I will develop the ability to believe and think that I may have a choice about it. Yeah. But in reality, I'm just a product of all my experiences, and they can be like backwards rationalized and like, well, you think this because of that and blah 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 blah. Everything can be deconstructed, and suddenly games is not all about games anymore. It's like, wait, what happened to fun? Like, it's like, no, now it's a philosophical discussion. What? You know?
Right.
So I want to go away from that too and just stick to the things that will make it fun. And if people want to take it to the next level of thought, they can do that on their own. But I'm just going to like leave some signposts and some pointers, like, oh, here's this thing. It points at something else. But yeah, we don't, for the game's sake, we're just going to ignore that path. It's like there's rabbit holes to the left and right, and staying on the path without even like looking at these rabbit holes with like fun things like, oh, there's like, oh, that's like looks like the best game ever there to the right, oh, something even better there, and oh, there's like the retro game I played the other, I really want to go there, and, but I better not, because I know where it ends. Or rather, I know that I'll just get lost. So staying to the center is probably the best, hence balance.
Balance, yeah. Yeah. Oh.
I think that's a good place to end this interview. this extra talk.
All right.
While people are still entranced and trying to figure out what the hell just happened.
Yeah. Well, wait a moment. They were talking about determinism, and now they're talking about balance. And what is this TV trope, anyway?
Yeah, it's like, now you have some things to be distracted with.
Yeah.
Like, and you, if you really want to be like me, I gotta ask you a question. Are you sure?
Oh, I don't know. What am I getting myself into, right?
Right. It's the path of unknown. But the trouble is, it's not me that's the unknown, really. Because anybody can get a story of me, and it's like, oh, he's this guy. He does music and blah, 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 and just leave it at that. So that's all that's going to be. It's always going to be just a story of
that's
somebody
right.
else.
A simplification, you know, sort of parsing the data and put it all together.
Yeah. So like a label.
A label.
It's not the content of the can. It's just the label. But if somebody were to turn their attention inwards, that's a whole different can of worms.
That's true. Well, I can't deny it. I think it's been a lot of fun thinking about these things.
It is.
Yeah. Thanks for the conversation, I suppose. If we have to stop it here. You know.
Yeah, we have to stop it here. Got to stop somewhere.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks very much.
Yep. It's been a pleasure.
Yep,
enjoy.
Likewise. All right. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.